I know it's been a long day for everybody. I'm going to try and go through this in as concise a fashion as possible, and hopefully I won't be tremendously boring here. This is a new talk that I haven't given before. And originally I was supposed to talk about secure coding techniques, aka writing secure code to withstand hostile environments. I'm actually kind of glad that I'm not, because the survey over there had maybe like one or two people show up as programmers. It needs to be addressed nonetheless. It's going to be addressed elsewhere. I don't know, are you still giving some?
I'm still doing that tomorrow.
Excellent. So for those people who are looking forward to mine, I apologize. I'm sure that Adam is going to do a wonderful job. Better topic than programmers. What could be a better topic than programmers? I don't know. Great. Let me give you a little bit of background about myself. You know, I'm a practicing alcoholic. That's basically because I have no social life. Please don't tell my girlfriend when she shows up tomorrow. And I guess my claim to fame recently, I started in computers in about 1975, building up, anybody remember the Southwest Technical Products computers? 6800, the Altairs, the, you know. Okay, anyway, I had no life then either, so not much has changed. We started up in Boston after a slight run-in with the law, because they were coming up with the laws at that time, so wasn't really breaking them, if you will. your letter, not mine. In Boston, we formed this group, seven of us did, called the Loft. I'm not going to bore you with the history of the Loft. We decided that it was, I'll just give you a slight overview, we decided it was much better to break into our own boxes than other people's boxes. And we were all trash pickers. I mean, we were amazed at the wonderful stuff that people would throw out. We now have a massively parallel processing supercomputer there. Scraps. We had to wait for them to throw out each individual part, but you know, diligently did it. So we've got probably about 20, 30, some 350s, some 360s, and a whole bunch of other junk set up. So, do you need money in order to do it? Do you have to break in other people's systems? No. You need a decent amount of drive. I like to think we're good guys. I like to think we're both black hat and white hat. I don't think the black hats are bad. I mean, sure, you have some people that joyride. You have some people that break into things. Now, you choose who you want to associate with, and you choose what you do. Loft. Let's see. Not too long. We've been publishing advisories lately. It seemed to be the hip thing to do. We wanted to shove them out. We thought we were coming up with really neat things, and we wanted to share it with people. So we did a really bad thing by giving some people information on buffer overflows a long time ago. Many people remember the split VT egg that came out for Linux. Well, behind the scenes, we probably had a bit more to do with that than we'd like to admit, and that got public, and now you have buffer overflows all over the place. Bye. It's a good thing. People are writing better code. So we said, this is really cool. We started coming out with other buffer for advisories. So we said, well, geez, you know, S key, let's do an attack on that. This looks fun because we see a way of doing it based upon the implementation advisory. Nobody cared. We did Kerberos. We saw this great buffer underflow because, you know, hey, buffer overflows are passe at this point. Come out with this. We were super proud about that. Nothing. Well, a really bright guy over at the Loft says, hey, check out this bug in Lotus Notes. Boom! Everybody's like, Lotus Notes. You mean that point-and-click thing, and they ate it up. Comes up with this really trivial oversight in Microsoft IIS, which was fixed promptly. Media loved it. So we said, okay, being glory hounds the way we are, we had to come out with Microsoft things, and they were really starting to invade the workplace. Everybody was accepting it. They were being shoved down companies' throats. When you asked why they were secure, they were like, oh, it's secure, trust us. Okay, sure, why not? So we came out with Loftcrack, because we saw, this is going to be, my slides might be a tad too big. Oh well. Now, I apologize in advance to the Microsoft people here, because I'm going to be a bit abusive in certain places. You know, I think Microsoft, and I say this at any speak I do, if it's related to Microsoft, I think Microsoft has merit. I think there are some good things that they've done. I think standardization in the workplace for common tool sets is amazingly important for getting things done. I think Microsoft has contributed a lot to that. I just don't like a lot of the big business, big marketing driven mentality. And I think that's biting people. And I think a lot of times they're selling into organizations saying, trust us, we're secure, because we're secure. And they won't tell you why they're secure. So we came out with LoftCrack. How many people have ever heard of LoftCrack before? Wow. See, GUI. We figured it out. If you put a GUI on it, we're going to go back to all Buffalo Overflows and we're gonna click. Okay. Now, how many people have ever run LoftCrack? How many people realize that the GUI wasn't anywhere nearly as complete as the command line version was? We're not really good. Just you wait. You're all privy to something that's going to be released here probably today and tomorrow before the rest of the world sees it. That's the last one. No, please don't be out of order. Scared. The talk today is basically how we did LoftCrack. Why Microsoft failed in their implementation, why backwards compatibility is killing them, why they can't get rid of that, and how they responded to it. And then the part that nobody knows about yet, except for you people coming today, is how we're responding to Microsoft's response, and then what you're going to see down the road. Give you a little bit of background here. How Microsoft stores user passwords. And some of this is going to be at a 30,000 foot level of overview. Microsoft stores user passwords in the SAN section of the registry. Jeremy Allison came out with a piece of code called pwdump. This was a boon to the Unix world that wanted to interoperate with Microsoft, because there's this great tool set called Samba, which lets the Unix side of things talk to the Microsoft side of things over the shared message block protocol that Microsoft does all their file sharing in. All their SMB is very important to Microsoft on the network. And these guys did a great job, because Microsoft apparently wasn't tremendously forthcoming with how things were working, so they had to reverse engineer a large part of it. So the two important things inside this registry are, well, let me back up. How many people are familiar with Unix password files? Okay, so you know that there's the username, there's 256 potential seeds for the exception, yada yada yada. There's the encrypted string usually, and some other junk garbage information. Microsoft pwdump outputs very similarly to the Etsy password file. It has the username, it has a UID, if you will, and it has the landman password, or one-way function, or hash, or kind of interchangeable, and the NT one-way function. Now, that's kind of interesting that right off the bat you can tell that they have one password encrypted two separate ways stored right next to each other. Some of you might already start to figure out where we're going with this. So, you all set?
No.
Oh. One second. The crack network crew calls, or the network crew on crack. I don't know which one it is.
One on that channel or one on the next channel.
Yeah. No, is this out of focus? I don't know. I'm just blind. Okay, so the pwdump program takes the output from the registry file, deobfuscates it. How many people are familiar with the term obfuscation? Okay, not everybody. Obfuscation is just a way of hiding something. It's not necessarily a secure way. It's just if I've got a secret communication protocol between Hobbit and myself, and I know that I XOR everything against FUBAR, that's kind of obfuscation. It's not really tough to figure out if you look at it, but at precursory examination, you don't see what's going on. So this is kind of hidden in the registry that way. Pwdump outputs this nice long string. So you've got the username, you've got some sort of UID, you've got the landman hash, and you've got the NT hash right here. So we have that broken down outside. Let's understand that. I'll tell you how they actually come up with these hashes. So that hash is representing, let's say, the letter A. My password is A. Or secret, or love, sex, God, money, for all the passwords that we've read out of the books never to use before. Landman has a bunch of restrictions as to what can happen. The landman password can be no more than 14 characters in length. If my password is 17 characters A, then the Landman password drops off the last three characters and looks at just the first 14. If it happens to be less, so let's say my password is AAA, it ends up padding it out with 11 nulls. All right, so they've got a length. Unix passwords are only 8 characters long. They get truncated. 14 sounds much better than that. Passwords all uppercase. If you have capital A, lowercase a, capital A, lowercase a, Landman's throwing that as A, all caps. 14-byte string, remember, padded out to nulls or else concatenated, or truncated, is split into 2 7-byte halves. Each one of these 2 7-byte halves is kind of sprinkled. I take that term from Hobbit, who's going, by the way, in an excellent talk on SMB and SIS. Probably go over a bit of this also. And they derive an 8-byte odd parity DES key from each 7-byte half. Okay, so you have these two keys. Derive the key schedule from that at that point. What do they do with those? So they did that off with the password AAAA, something like that. Okay, if they don't mind. A known constant, I love that, is encrypted with each 8-byte odd parity DES key. Sure. Am I in here?
No. You said it was 7 characters each, 14 characters each.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean, and you said the
parity
bit was stripped off, like 7 and
6? No. So what they do is they take a 7-byte string and they derive an 8-byte key. And out of that, it's a parity key.
Okay.
It's odd parity. Does that answer your question at all?
Yeah.
Okay,
great.
So they've got these two 8-byte keys that they've derived from 7-byte strings. And they have this one constant, which I don't remember it offhand. Microsoft apparently was threatening people, not necessarily, I shouldn't say threatening, but was complaining that, geez, you should never publish this constant because that would defeat the security. No, it's not. Anybody can derive it. It's bad security whether the constant's published or not. And you have to know, and it was available, quote unquote, upon request. What they do is they encrypt these, and I'm going to give an example, to come up with 2 8-byte results. So they encrypt the first half against this known string, and they encrypt the second half against the same known string. And they just shove them together, and there's your 16-byte Landman one-way function. Okay. Did IBM come up with Landman a long time ago? Okay. Is that right? Landman is ancient. Landman is really, really old.
Actually,
a lot of the internals of Landman
were published in an IBM Red Book,
which in fact,
rarely found in a
news
bookstore.
It was 25 cents. Jimmy Allison found that?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's actually how.
Excellent. Oh, that is so beautiful. 25 cent security. Okay. So let's take an actual look at what's going on behind the scenes. We've got user 2A, and created the name there, the password of lowercase a. Capitalize it, so it's capital A, capital A. Pad it out so that you got 14, you break it in half. AA, 5 nulls, and then 7 nulls over here. You encrypt each side, each one of those halves. Sorry about this. No, I'm sorry. First you take those 7 bytes and you derive your 8-byte odd parity DES key. From that, you set up your key schedule, standard DES ECB stuff. I highly recommend people start playing with SSLOY. I don't even know a better way of pronouncing that. SSLOY, please. There's some great public crypto out there for implementing new stuff. I wouldn't do it necessarily this way, though. Okay, from that point, the known constant, I really should have written it down, is encrypted with the first key schedule, then the second key schedule. So they get the, after the first one, output 1, which is where our holder, contains this string for AA, what was it, 2As, AA and 5 nulls. And output 2, and remember this is 7 nulls that's being encrypted to come out with this, contains that string. Then they then concatenate them together. There's no seed, so if user 2A has a password of AA, and user Mudge has a password of AA, and you look inside the registry, they look identical. You can very quickly say, oh, these two people have the same passwords. Unix actually takes a step to get around there, but, I mean, got to give it to Microsoft. At least they don't necessarily send it directly in plain text over the network like Unix did. What else can you tell from this? If you look down the list of passwords that you're dumping out, and you see this second half for a lot of them, what do you know about the password length? 7 characters or less. Well, now we've gone from having to worry about saying 14 is better than 8 characters in Unix to saying, well, now we're down to 7 characters, and it's case insensitive. It gets better. Lead into better any way you want to. Well, if they concatenate them together, we can see that was the second half, AA, D3, D4, 3, 5. Then you can just screen down there and go, oh, this person's got a password greater than 7 characters, this person's got a password less than 7 characters. Interesting information to know. Dun, dun, dun. Why, it's lame. Well, we just talked about that. I'm a little ahead of myself. I haven't ever really, other than through my cat, gone over these slides, and the cat just went, wow. My cat doesn't use MT either. My cat is named that cat. You laugh, this poor guy wrote Netcat, and he has to put up with me as a quote-unquote friend. Okay, so remember they were storing both of these. They had the Landman password, and they have the MT-Dialect password. MT-Dialect password, I'm going to kill myself tripping over this, it's pretty decent. If they do, it can be up to 128 characters in length. That's not bad. It's case sensitive. It's getting better. Password converted to Unicode. Big deal. That's now at 256 characters that they're storing. So a little bit of bloat. Microsoft is kind of known for some code bloat anyway. What's a little extra? Password is then run through the MD4, Message Digest 4. The resulting 60, and it basically loops over itself to come out with a 16-byte value. That's the empty hash. Well, not bad. Not a tremendous. I mean, there's still no seed, so it'll show up as the same thing each time. But you know, that sounds a bit better than the Landman passwords so far. So here we go through the same example of what's actually happening behind the scenes. We convert it into Unicode. I realize it's important to have kanji support, but really, folks, come on. Unicode, 61, null, you know, 8, null. So everything's got to have 2 bytes associated with it as opposed to 1, where you normally see the standard ASCII representation happening. So, we have that, what's now a 4-byte representation of AA because of Unicode, run through MD4. And that's the resulting string. A little bit better in password length, at least. And I can't tell, just looking at that one, how long a user's password is. Oh, yeah. I'm just confusing myself. I hope these are in order. Yeah. So we looked at that, and we said, gee, this is kind of funny. And we said, cool. Wozcrack. We said, we have to get a GUI going for this. If we were running it on Unix boxes, and we were having a field day, that was pretty neat. But that's what we do. That's what we kind of like to do. That's where we get our kicks. We like looking at how people do things, and especially when they're really, really, really universally present, and they're telling you that they're doing it one way, and if you look into it, it's all smoke and mirrors, or so it would seem. So Lostcrack came out. Now I'm just going to start putting them there. So let's start talking about how we attack these hashes. We take the output from the deobfuscated registry dump, and we do any number of the following things. We script and compare dictionary attack against the Landman hash. So, you have a nice long dictionary. User dict words off a Unix machine. You go to any of the sites and grab, you know, horrendously huge dictionaries. English, French, Swedish, yada, yada, yada. Some people collect stamps. We collect dictionaries. All you do is you run it through the same routines that they were doing to derive their Landman hash, and you compare the output. If the output matches, hey, that was the password. If it doesn't match, you go on to the next one. Really simple, a lot of things fall through it because a lot of people choose stupid passwords. And we will address the fact that Microsoft lets you try and enforce strong passwords in a little bit. Making cryptocurrency against the MT hash. A little more computationally intensive, but MT4 is a pretty fast fast hash. The problem is we can screen through dictionaries extremely quickly because we're only doing one round of the of DES and the landman. At least in Unix, and I'm not trying to put down NT in comparison to Unix, I wish they would have learned from some of the mistakes as opposed to re-implementing the past 20 years in some cases. Maybe they'll start. They've still got plenty of time. In Unix, you have 256 possible combinations, but you have the seed to say, geez, if I have a password of love and my buddy has a password of love, they're not going to show up the same in the FD password file. And then it goes through 24 rounds. Does somebody correct me? It was 24 rounds. Hobbs, do you remember?
Some
numbers. I remember 24. Which one of the cool things I'm doing is you don't have to worry about your users being able to cut and paste the entries from the empty password file from machine to machine to put them on there. Change the number of rounds. Change how many times it goes through. Somebody grabs your password file and runs crack. They're not going to get anything, unless they know what you're doing. Which you can figure that out. So we can quickly compare the MT hash. Well, what was so bad about having these two hashes next to each other? MT seems to be a pretty decent one. Landman seems to be a pretty lame one. How strong is all the encryption then? What's it equal to? Exactly. Lowest common denominator. So we'll quickly compare dictionary attack against the Landman one, and then we'll derive the MT hashes. Because if we have... and you have a password that, let's say, is less than 14 characters or 14 characters or less, and it's A, all A's, but it's all sorts of different case iterations of the letter A. All you have is 2 to the 14th iterations to run through. That's nothing. That's a small enough number that you can very quickly figure out the case sensitivity of the password. Chances are, if you had numbers and other characters in there that you don't have an uppercase or lowercase comparison to, you don't even have to go that far. Here's the part that we really, really enjoyed. We also give you the option of brute forcing the entire key space to break the Landman hash. I don't think an operating system has ever come out in a large public setup that does their passwords in a method that allows you to actually go through the entire key space and return every user's password. Guaranteed. So, they're coming out saying don't use passwords like cat and dog that are easily guessable. Don't use passwords that are in a dictionary. And we're saying, don't use passwords that are less than or equal to 14 characters in length. I can't even remember half of my 8-character Unix passwords. I'm not going to be able to do that. There were some problems in the implementation of the brooder in version 1.0, so it did run a bit slower because we realized we're coming from a Unix world on this, and when we switched over to the Pentium boxes, we had problems with overflowing the L2 cache, yada, yada, yada. There were some coding things. Brief history of Loftcrack is I was really, really, really sick with the flu. Sat down one night, the same night that Jeremy Allison released the PW dump, and said, I can do a dictionary attack. Wrote Loftcrack. Got over the flu. That was 3 months later. This thing was coming up. Got really sick again. So, of course, what do I do when I'm sick? I pull out Loftcrack and said, I'm gonna add the next part in, which we're going to talk about in the next release, which is here. So if anybody wants me not to work on Loftcrack, make sure I stay healthy. And if we can brute force through the Landman, we can then derive the MT one, obviously. We'll approach the dictionary attack. This is really straightforward. We say, okay, we want to do the Landman only, do a simple crypto compare based upon the dictionary. We can throw away words that are longer than 7 characters if we see the user password is 7 characters or less. Because we just take the string length out of the dictionary, we know just by looking at the files what they are. For each word, we only encrypt it once, then we run through the entire user list. We don't have to run through the dictionary each time over and over again for every user. I encrypt the word A, nobody has it. I run through everybody's password because there's no C. There's no change if user A has A, user C has A, they're both going to show up identically. That goes really quickly. So, let's say... I've seen a lot of large companies use passwords when they initially set up users of things like ChangeMe. Boom. We have an 8 meg file, 100 user list, for the dictionary attack. I think it was around 60 seconds it took to go through the dictionary attack. And our code is not, whoa, electrical. No, good. Okay, you can do the MD4 style. This is not necessarily as fast. Do the simple equip and compare. Check each dictionary word. No, I'm sorry, this slide is an error. Oh, okay. Now, we do actually do that. I'm sorry. I'm reading it along for the first time also. So we get a password and it's 7 characters long. We go through 2 to the 7th possible iterations out of the dictionary as opposed to hoping that you have all the possible permutations of case sensitivity in your dictionary. I mean, that would be a pretty big dictionary pretty quickly. So people typing in uppercase, lowercase, don't get away from us. For each word, yet again, since there's no randomization, we only have to encrypt the dictionary word, the 2 to the length, and each time compare through the entire list. And we'll get anybody who's got duplicate passwords, even if they're different cases, obviously. So, Landman and MT. Well, there was a common denominator. Go up to the Landman one. If we can get that in the dictionary, then we just iterate through to come up and derive the MT one. Now, the only times you won't see it work is if your password is longer than 14 characters, because it's going to end up being different at that point. And what we're taking as the absolute of 14 characters, they have extended path. It would be very trivial to go in and say, okay, I found the 14-character long Landman hash that's inside there, so I'm going to try it against the MT one, and if it doesn't match, another more than 14 characters, tack on an extra 2 characters, please, and just go through those. So you can up it to at least 16 and still remain relatively, processor friendly, shall we say. Just in case somebody wanted to say, if I've got a 15-character long password. We don't have it implemented. It would be simple. We give away all the source to our code, hopefully, because people will say, geez, you did this in a stupid way. Why don't you try it like this? That way we learn also, and people can see how things are working on the internals. Oh, the brute force attack. A lot of people really complain about that because they started running it, and they're like, it's taking me over a day. Jeez, I have to tell a piece of information. Microsoft sent me an email about this one. Or did they send me an email or did somebody tell me about this? I don't remember. I said, geez, if the brute force is going to take a couple of days to actually run through, why can't these guys find better things to do with their time? Takes 10 seconds to turn on the brute force and I walk away and do everything else. Yeah, it's a computer. During the middle of the night, it's idle. Idle CPUs are bad CPUs. All CPUs should be churning and churning and churning. Otherwise, you're wasting money. You paid for it. Let it work. Okay. Anything above the strongest password length in MT is 7 characters. So if I'm brute forcing, 1 character is easy. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7, you start getting into, let's say the key space is 40 characters. What is that? 40th? You're starting to pop big numbers. 6 to the 40th, much smaller. So 7 can take a while. 10, 11, 12, 13, you're catching those on your way up because you're comparing each half independently. So I simply say, this person has a password length of longer than 7 characters. If I'm on iteration round number 2 or 3 or 4, I'm not even going to bother comparing the first half because I know that that's 7. I'm only going to be comparing, and each time you do a compare, you're taking a little bit of CPU time, so try and do a few compares and try and be as precise as possible. I'm not the best code writer. And we only compare the right-hand side of it. So we happen to get 3 A's, AAA. Great, we lock into the 3, the second half of that, fill in the user structure we've built up, and we wait till we get to the 7th round to crack anybody who's got 7 characters or less, and at the same time we crack those 7 characters ones, we're spitting out the 10s, the 14s, the 13s, etc., etc. So that's something you can actually take with you. If you're going to enforce password length, enforce it at 7, as a minimum. You're not hurting it by making it lower. Well, actually, that's not true, or longer, because if you start brute forcing it and you add a couple flags on to say, kick out the second half as you're seeing it, it's pretty easy to start inferring and then start going into a dictionary attack after that based upon the second half of the, look it up in a dictionary, see if that happened to be it. or as opposed to being truly, quote-unquote, random. Many, many ways of going after it. I'm going to walk through here. I'm just going to kind of, you know, slide over this, exactly what I was telling you. Key spaces A. Ooh, this is going to be a quick one. So these are all the possible letters we're going to let our users choose from. This is just for example, obviously. 7A of the password. This is showing why the longer than 7 character long passwords are no stronger than the 7 character long passwords. Guess I got ahead of myself. How many passwords do you have? How long of a password? Remember this one? That's all null. That's 7 characters or less. This guy's got longer than 7 characters. That happens to be, I guess, what, 10A user. So, we take that information, we take it to heart. Yes? AAB3B4, well, no. That's what computers are for. Like I said, people are really bad at remembering long strings. Computers are pretty good at it. No, you know, I actually played with the idea of you know, just quickly memorizing the available upon request string. It's in the source code. It's documented. Here's the string they don't want you to see. It's in a whole bunch of other people's source code also. All right, we just talked about that. I'm going to breathe. I know it's been a long day. You guys have been great with sitting through a lot of these talks. Of course, fortunately, the talks have been really good from what I've seen. Oh, so we break the 14 characters one. We do the same old thing. We derive the NT one off of it. No big deal. 2 to the 7th. Okay, so the guy with the 10th. 2 to the 10th. 1,024 possibilities. That'll take all of way less than a second. What could you use LostTech for? I mean, this is an evil tool. Nobody'd ever want to use this. You know who should want to use it? The administrators of the NT machine. You know what you have to be to run it? You have to be the administrator. If all the bad guys are the administrator, you've got more problems to worry about. LostTech is not what's going to do you in. So, if you're administrator, you could run it, you could check, and you could ensure that users aren't using bad passwords. If you had an enforceable password policy, so that the users had to say, okay, your password has to be 6 characters in length, and it's got to have at least one uppercase character, one lowercase, and some other, you know, jazz in it. You can still return the password and say, well, damn, this user is using, you know, Susan with a capital S, 0. Next month, she uses Susan 1, Susan 2. You know, it's meeting the requirements of my policy, but a lot of times you don't quite realize what could meet the requirements, and they might not be that good. Okay, we thought it was a good, just a large reason was to release it so people could see what's going on behind the scenes there. We weren't very happy with that, with people telling us that this is a secure way of doing this thing. We have one-way functions. We use DES encryption. DES is cool. MD4 is cool. I mean, this is great. Everybody goes, yeah, rah, 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 strong crypto. Sorry, am I getting carried away? Yes. No.
We call that buzzword compliance.
Oh, yes. She is a marketing-driven company being buzzword compliant. Go figure. Okay, attackers could use LostTech, no problem, if they had administrator privileges, if they had it on a PC. I was told recently Microsoft runs under one primary domain controller, one domain. So if somebody pops, I mean, I could be wrong, this could be erroneous information. If somebody pops that PDC, they're going to get everybody's password at Microsoft if they run LostTech on it. Yeah. It'd be kind of cool to see that show up in a news group, wouldn't it? I can only guess what it would be. Let's see. Yep. The BDCs will have access to that if you wanted to dump it. So Microsoft's response, which we were really hoping for a better response than this. We're just a bunch of 7 guys, so we were kind of impressed that interface was raw. They didn't get it. They came back and said, don't choose easily guessable passwords. Like cat or dog. Don't choose an easily guessable password, which could be AXC752, up to 14 characters in length. And they said, dictionary attacks will always be able to be run on people. Yeah, dictionary attacks. But they're brute forcing you. Then they came out with a FISCI patch to prevent the administrator from reading the hash values out of the registry. Way to spike your leg by chopping off your foot, right. So in other words, Microsoft made it that the attackers, only the attackers could use the tool. If you had a way of getting this information, you could back out the FISCI, put it back in, back it out. Yeah. They made it more difficult for the administrator to see this. I look at that and I say, and this is speculation, marketing, save face, don't fix the problem. Well, how can they? I mean, we're going to talk about why Landman's even in there. Okay, the administrator can't run it, but everybody else theoretically could. They said, you had to be the administrator. Okay, great. And FISCI patch is only going to work on that local machine. They can't force it to do different things over the network because they're going to break all their clients. This is why they have Landman. Landman is so that you don't break all your clients when you're talking old Windows for Workgroup machines, Windows 95 machines. I don't think I've ever been to a company that's running an entirely NT, say 4.0 or 3.5 NT network. Microsoft can't say that they're running entirely NT. You know, any of the big companies, you're going to have 95. You might even have some, like, you know, Windows 3.1 clients sitting there. And those users are going to want to talk to the shares on the NT machines. Those guys don't understand the NT dial-up in certain cases. So they have to dummy down the Landman. And the server has to say, okay, you tell me how smart you can be. Well, we can tell you how smart we want to be also. Even if we can do NT, we're going to say, hi, I'm a dumb old client. You know, please talk to me very slowly so I can understand you. In other words, Landman. So our response to Microsoft's response, which hopefully will be posted on the web page, our web page, tomorrow. I have Lostrack 1.5 here. I haven't released it or packaged it up yet. If anybody wants to drop me a floppy at some point, I'd be more than happy to make copies for you. It's going to be up on our web page the first day of DEF CON. Kind of as an announcement here. What does it do? Everything that 1.0 does. What else does it do? It attacks the challenge response mechanism that Microsoft uses over the network to prevent hashes from going over as the actual hashes. They realize these hashes are the same thing as plain text passwords. I mean, if I had the hash, FFB3, whatever, yada, 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 and I didn't know secret, that doesn't matter. I could send that hash over the network, and it would log me in. That's just as good as my password. So they try and quote unquote, well, they do a bit more than obfuscating it. They encrypt it. They have a challenge from the server, and it goes to the client, and the client encrypts its packet based upon that. Well, guess what? You can be sitting there with every machine on the network having the FISCI patch inside of it. It's not going to change what's going over on the network, and if you can break this, it's just as good as not being administrator. We wanted to release 2.0, which locally on the machine you wouldn't be administrator. 2.0 is still going to come out. It's going to have to do a whole bunch of more interesting things now. We also fixed the problem of overflowing the Pentium LT cache for big speed improvement. Fixed a bunch of other erroneous bugs. I'd like to take this time actually to thank, where's Tubor? I guess it's a non-issue locally on the machine because you have to be administrator, and geez, if you have a FISCI, you can't even dump out the registry stuff anymore. Let's talk about what they do on the network. This is much worse. This is really bad, I think. Client requests a logon challenge. Server sends back 8 bytes of quote-unquote randomness, which is time of day plus plus for all intents and purposes. Well, Secure ID uses time. That'll be decent. Yeah, exactly. That's obfuscation. The client desencrypts the Landman and the NT dialect hashes with 8-byte challenge and sends them back to the server. Server does the exact same thing in reverse. The server looks up the registry hash, says, I sent him this challenge. I will encrypt what I think is supposed to be the right response with this challenge and compare it to what he sent me, or she sent me. If it's good, they let him in. If it's not, they don't. Now it really works. Whoa. Client takes a 16-byte hash, the one-way function for the value from the registry. It adds 5 nulls to it. I love static things that they always consistently keep putting in places. It makes it much easier to figure out what's going on if you know a certain value is going to be showing up all the time. So, thank you. Now we have 21. So, 16 plus 5 nulls is 21.
This is the new protocol they developed like this year in response to your attack.
This is what they're always doing on the network.
Okay, no, this is an old.
Right, because their network was a challenge response system, so you wouldn't be able to see the password. They forced us to go look at this because they said, you know, we're going to mask you like the administrator so we can't run the program. We're like, you're not getting it. There's a 21-byte value and the three groupings of 7. Can you start seeing Landman creep right the hell back in here? Take each of these 7-byte values and derive 3 8-byte odd parity DES keys. This is starting to sound familiar. If you want to know how it really, really works, Hobbit's talk. Don't miss the SMB this one. Okay, it does encrypt the 8-byte challenge, which each of these key schedules, and concatenates them to form a 24-byte response. Same challenge, boom, once, twice, three times. Client then sends a 24-byte response back to the server. Same thing is done for the MB4 hash. They're a little luckier because the MB4 hash might be a little more difficult to begin with. Oh, I'm trying to be polite. So we're going to walk through it. We'll see exactly what's happening here. Landman hash. This is the 16. That's the Landman hash. You can tell it's less than 7 characters at this point, but this is still locally on the machine right now. Server sends a challenge. Boom. Landman says, all right, I got the challenge. Let me take my 16-byte long string, add the 5 nulls, I'm up to 21. There's the string at the top. I break it into 3 groups of 7. I derive 3 odd parity 8-byte DES keys off of that. If there are people that think I'm going too quickly through the technical stuff, the source code is publicly available. I hung out with Hobbit a lot. And I listened. He's going like fucking count. How do we derive the process? Oh, a lot of the stuff is done in Samba because they had to figure out how to do it. A lot of this stuff is still broken as to how it's going back and forth. They've got a lot of really good people working on that. I don't know how Hobbit's some of the other stuff there.
That stuff is made publicly available from Microsoft.
Oh, that's a lot of Microsoft tech specs. They help. With the Swift specification and how they do things, challenge response back and forth. And I'm sure I'll have some stuff to add on to that. So we've got the three 7-byte long strings. Set up the key schedules. Kind of cruise through this. Server challenge is encrypted. Dun, dun, dun. So now we're seeing the three separate blocks that are going to be concatenated at this point. To form a 24-byte response that's going back over. I thought I was lying. Well, I'm not going to steal a lot of the thunder from Hobbs talk, but there are some really wonderful things that we're throwing into Loftcrack based upon this. We can still figure out very quickly if the user has a 7-character long or less password. That's trivial. We also get back the last byte of the first 8 octet when we do that, if it happens to be less than 7. And let's see, do some of this from, maybe I actually do talk about it a little bit. Yep, okay, I do. Cool. Let me not get ahead of myself like that. Dictionary attack's fine. Still the same way. You just add the extra step of watching the challenge, come back over, breaking up, creating the actual hash from the dictionary the same way we did before. Appending the nulls, encrypting against the challenge, watching and see if that goes back over. And we're going to actually show you a session that we caught earlier today on this little network over on MT Logon and run it through Loftcrack in brute force mode. It happened to be a 3-character long password that if it was just randomly typed in, and you see it kicked it back out in probably about 2 seconds. In the brute force mode, we can take the last 2 bytes of the Landman hash that was derived from a password of 7 of less than or equal to 7 characters, which is 0x04 or 0xEE. Remember that string, the second 8 half, or second 8 bytes. We append 5 nulls and encrypt it based upon the server challenge. If that matches, there's a good chance, we don't know for sure right now, but there's a good chance that the password was 7 characters or less. So what do we do based upon knowing that? We take the, because it breaks up, and he's got pictures tomorrow, which I don't have pictures because I can't draw. You take the last one byte from the first eight, because think about how you're breaking it up. 8, 8, 16, 5. And you're splitting that down 7, 7, 7. So you've got 5 null plus 2 of the original. You've got the... Oh, I can't do this in my head. You've got the second half, the second 7 before the 5 nulls pretty much lined up. They just skew over sideways to the 24. So I'm pretty sure right now that the person's password is 7 characters or less. So I'm going to run through and I'm going to grab the last, the last one byte off of the first 8 in the user's password, and I'm going to run through all 256 possibilities until I match up with the last part there. Now I either know that the user's password was null, and I also have the last byte of the first 8 half, or I say, okay, throw that one out, but I still know the last byte over here for the, I still know what these things are going to start matching up to based upon the last 7 that they create with the nulls. I know that was really a obtuse way of presenting that. I apologize. Look at the code. That's an obtuse way of representing it also. Gleaned. I had to use the word gleaned. I guess that's why I put that slide up there. Surprised I didn't put Grok in here somewhere else there. So now we start, and I kind of gloss over this, start working backwards and brute forcing, because we're able to derive enough information and fill up the structures and know what we need to compare at what points. I mean, this is a hell of a lot easier if I can say, well, damn, I only have to compare the second half here. Damn, I know I have to compare the first half at this point. I'm still, reduced to 7 characters, brute forcing 7 characters to get through this. If I wanted to be a crypto whiz, I'd probably go over and approach somebody like this and say, yeah, talk to me about the sprinkling they're doing. They're throwing bits away here left and right. I mean, Hobbit's brought that up to me many times. That's not what this is. We're going after an implementation thing. I think that's an implementation problem. Somebody else is going to have to do that one. Like a lot of numbers and math and all this other stuff. Okay, so you say, geez, well, that's a pretty crappy way of doing it, but I'm on an NT box talking to another NT box. I don't have to talk LAN, man. Dump. They send both anyway. Yeah.
Even under SP3.
Do they? Do we know that for a fact?
Yep.
Okay. Even under Service Pack 3.
Yeah.
Backwards compatibility. I don't even know why that's back. Well, whatever. I'm sure we want to understand what CC was for later on also. Right. You could stop your 95 users and everybody else from using the network effectively. I'm sure a lot of companies are doing that. It's backwards compatibility is a bane for people to carry. It really sucks, but it's an excuse in a way. It was recently pointed out to me that the SMB signing that they do, how much are you going to talk about that tomorrow? Okay, good. If you can do this, and if you can take the information out of LoftTech, you can break the SMB signing in almost the same fashion that was put into what Service Pack 3. And I will not talk about that anymore at that point. I'm probably pissed at me anyway at this point. We had promised 2.0 a while back. Like I said, I was healthy for most of the time, so I didn't get to work on it. What are you going to see in 2.0? Because we said, hey, with 2.0, we're going to increase the brute forcing speed, and we also are going to let you do this without being administrator, because we thought we saw a couple of really neat ways of doing that, and we still think we do see those ways. 1.5, you don't have to be administrator, but that's kind of a sleaze way of doing it, looking on the network. Well, it's a sleaze way of doing it, considering we had implied that you'd be able to sit on the box as a regular user and do it. It's still a completely viable attack. Oh, and you know, especially when the administrator can't run this tool on his system now, but anybody else hooked up to the network can. Okay, we're going to see in 2.0. Well, we decided, since we kind of, you know, let's make by with the 1.5, we're going to add some more stuff in there. PDC, BDC, tomfoolery. There's a lot of really neat stuff that NT does over the network with PDCs and BDCs. I'm going to throw in a sniffer kit for the Unix side of things. That should be out in a couple of days to grab, just promiscuously watching the network traffic and pull out the server challenges, the username, and the NT hashes that are going back over, so that you can just build up your list and then run loss back on it, dictionary attack or brute force, do whatever you want. We've gotten anonymous emails saying that, you know, we are more than welcome to have the code, the source code for gitadmin.exe to try and, you know, revamp up and put in LoftCrack. I thought that was, you know, kind of nice. So I haven't gotten any. Okay, yeah, sure. Give it over. Passive mode component. We're also putting together our service pack. The disk service pack, we've got a bunch of things already done for it that we've used in auditing internal networks and playing with stuff. Disk service pack, we will try and maintain and keep it as mostly our own stuff. There's a great tool out there that Hobbit wrote along with his paper to probe around. We're not going to include that because it's not ours, and we don't want to, you know, misrepresent it in that aspect. We do have some things like circuit layer proxies that you can throw into the NT machines, and therefore basically bounce attacks, bounce mail, do whatever. It looks like it's all coming from the NT machine, and nothing's getting logged because, of course, we didn't feel like we really wanted to write into those hooks. Jeez, well, I mean, NT has all this great security stuff, but unless you actually use it, it's not doing anything. Telnet daemon. Okay, you get in the machine, they're running a web server. You use Hobbit's tool to actually get access to the file shares. So you put your program up there, and now you're going to say, well, geez, I need to execute it. They're running a web server, you have access to the file shares, write a CGI script, put it up there, connect to the web server, it kicks off your program. This program happens to listen on a port, an arbitrary port that you just define, and when you tell it into it, you get Microsoft, whatever, C:\. Okay. Like, my big thing was, when I was working on some of these auditing things, companies were going, well, what can you do on an NT box? It's not like it's Unix. It's not like you're sitting there and you have access to all this stuff. So, well, if you're asking what can you do on an NT box, why do you have it up on your network in the first place? You can do anything over the network that you could if you were sitting directly at it from a command line aspect. Expect to see some interesting wins and DHCP stuff in here also. And I think there's one other thing I wanted to say. And I'm going to get it now. Oh, so the sniffer, whoops, this thing is going to kill me. The sniffer will come out on the Unix one. If we actually get the money together to buy the GDK over at Loft, because realize Loft is not my full-time job. We're 7 people who do this as a hobby because we love doing it. And we actually think we're helping people in many cases. I know sometimes it's painful, but if we get the money together for a device developer, the DDK for Microsoft, or we can get Microsoft to give it to us, we're going to try and come out with please give us the DDK so we can see how you do your packet drivers, so we can come out with a sniffer for the NT-based thing. So we'll see how that goes. I guess I'd like to thank everybody. Okay, if you have questions or whatever. Thank you. Thought about it, and we've basically said this is all possible. I hope we're pushing people in the right direction. LoftCrack is not something that we want to spend a tremendous amount of time on. We basically want to say there's some really overt problems here. The more you look at it, the more it starts falling apart even further than this, as what you're mentioning here. I hope people start looking into that. I hope Microsoft, when they come up with like the quote-unquote fixes in the next ones, start doing that as opposed to patching things like SysKey.
The better way to do that is to use a gray code for the brute force surface, which is one, faster, and two, catches the commonality before it does
Staying more on without looking into actually, you know, which bits are being thrown here and where, what was at least added into 1.5 is the ability for you to specify your own key space files. So Microsoft has this specification that they had on their site that says the usable key space is something like A through Z, 0 through 9, and a couple punctuation things. And they had a whole bunch that they listed that you couldn't use. So it dropped it down to about 36. Now, in reality, you can use much more than that. You can use the things that they're telling you not to. So I don't know exactly what the appropriate specification is. And if you grab and you go and I was trying to put together some files for different languages. I grabbed some books out of one of the quote-unquote declassified crypto libraries that I like to frequent. And there are frequency distributions of letters in different languages, frequency distribution of words and stuff. I didn't get a chance to put it together. That would definitely help. Speed it up. But at the same time, you're not going through the full key space at that point. You're doing, you know, best guess based upon common reusage and reusage. So there's plenty of room for improvement. Right now, the current times we're getting off of the full key space attack, on a Pentium 75 megahertz machine, I'm able to get through the first round of all seven characters in about, what was it? About a day. Which means that I've got another 40 to go, or I've got another, you know, 36. That's a good month or so. That's on a Pentium 75. If you build it on an UltraSpark and you turn on all the UltraSpark optimizations and compiling, I get through the first round of seven in about an hour and a half. So it's about 40 hours to go through all of it. That's not bad. I've run dictionary attacks on Unix password files and let them run for weeks. You know, so I hope somebody takes it and says, geez, the idea is good. The code could be cleaned up. This could be optimized tremendously. That's why we give you the code. If somebody wants to, great. Run with it. You know, do cool stuff. Please send us back the changes and stuff so we can learn from it. Oh yeah, let's run through a real quick sample. I'm running the command line one.
Show on this config, if you would.
Oh, could I not up here? Yeah.
Not on that.
Oh, I guess I wasn't done. I appreciate the pausing. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope that's coming through. Yes. We can go to sleep now. What are you? What are we? 2.168.2. Gotcha. 1.2.168. 244. Yeah, I know what you're laughing at. I don't know where anything is anymore now that I use that. Okay, that should be up at this point. There's the last card, command line version. The GUI has PWDump built into it now and all this other fun jazz. So people who were complaining that you had to run a command line thing, I realize administrators really like to point and click just as much as script kiddies, so. I'm just going to show you real quickly a couple of other things before I show you the network attack. Here's a test file of passwords. We've got administrator 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, 6A. It's kind of guessable what their passwords are. This is a test file. Like such as 3A's, 2A's. We can take a look at it. I'll show you a super simple words file. Most people should be really familiar with this if you've run any tools like Unix's Crack or any of the other NT type things. So I'll say I'm going to use test. I'm going to hand in dictionary of words, and I'll ask for both by leaving the flags on, which means it's going to grab the landman hash and then derive the NT one because of that. The other options are, of course, saying I only want the landman, I only want NT, or I brute force through this. You can see how quickly we start getting up into the four-letter characters. And that's really nothing for it. If we wait for a couple more, you know, 30 more seconds, whatever, we get up into the five-letter characters, the five-letter passwords. We're almost halfway through the fours. That's not a tremendous key space right there, granted, so things can increase a bit more. You don't have a tremendous possible key space, though. Oops. So if I take a look at the sniff logs, what we've done is, inside here, we've seen user one go by. This is just a holder right now. They send how long the actual response is going to be, such as 24 bytes for the encrypted response. If you see it being less than 24, it's going over in plain text, so you don't even bother. You just snag it at that point. Server challenge, let's put here. There's a response, the landman and the NT one that you see always go by. New guy, I changed the name, was who we saw go by earlier today on the network. Capital T telling it's going to be a sniffer log. And we can go at it, you know, with the Word file. I should have changed the name of this machine. I didn't realize that. I apologize if I offended people with the domain I'm coming from. And for those who didn't realize why I brought it up, I apologize. And, of course, the more interesting part is... And there was the new guy that we just saw go by who happened to have been LKJ. And we noticed because we went from the Samba client over to NT that it didn't bother sending both of them. It just sent the landman hash across. So I hope people make use of the tool. That's what it's there for. Oh, how it's going to drive. Cute. Okay, no password. Cute. I like your system. Did you drive proof in this? I mean,
sure.
Explain.
What we got here was just a packet dump of a session setup going between one laptop and the other. As we go down through this, I'm in VI at the moment, so it's not really obvious where it's going. We see the elements of the session setup. We see the dialect stuff going by. And inside here is the challenge and the response. And basically, the companion to the logcrack has to be the sniffer thing that picks those parts out of the network traffic that builds that SMB password format file we then plug in the logcrack.
Which will be shipped with it, but as a separate command line program.
Now, where this funky stuff, which is cursor, where I'm trying to insert some ANSI sequences to change colors here is where the challenge and response begins. I have a clarification of this, which I hope actually works as a type out.
Green bits.
Nicely done.
I should use this color.
No, that works.
At any rate, this is the session, the dialect response packet where the challenge is buried, and this is the response packet where the 24 byte of response are buried. And it's pretty easy to go down to the SMB headers and stuff and pick these fields out. The challenge begins here, runs 8 characters. The response begins here and runs 24. Pick those off, build your file, and so forth.
And you also get the username at the tail end there also,
yes.
Which is handy to have.
You have an administrator on the tail end there, and you see that, well, gee, that's going to be worth cracking.
All right, so, DT, where are you? He's not here. I imagine that was the last talk of today. Everybody go drink some beers.
Yeah.
And if you like this one, if this one was useful, check Hobbits out tomorrow. Yeah.
Yes, he's going to be releasing them tomorrow. Yeah, I changed topics last night.
Additional handouts didn't get into the program, but will all be given out.
No problem.
Thanks.
Do you have the presentation? They're going to
be available
tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow.
I'm going to hit the back.
Can we get the mic over there?
Ah.
Oh, it works.